They left Thebes in the early hours of the next morning, while most of the city still slept, and even the guards at the east gate were yawning and heavy-eyed. Nefer was laid in the back of the wagon, drawn by a team of four horses. These draught animals had been carefully chosen by Hilto. They were strong and healthy, but not exceptional in any way that might excite envy or comment. The wagon was loaded with essential supplies and the equipment they might need once they had left the river valley. Hilto was dressed as a wealthy farmer, Merin as his son, and Bay as their slave. Nefer was laid on a straw mattress in the bed of the wagon, under a screen of tanned leather. He was now fully conscious and able to understand all that Taita had to tell him. Despite the royal safe conduct, the sergeant of the guard was officious. He did not recognize Taita under his hood, so he climbed into the back of the wagon to inspect the contents. When he pulled back the screen and Nefer peered out at him with his gaunt, pale features, spotted with the unmistakable scarlet stigmata of the plague that Taita had applied, the sergeant of the guard swore with horror and leapt down from the wagon, signing so vehemently against evil that he dropped his lamp, which shattered at his feet. "Get you gone!" he shouted frantically at Hilto on the reins. "Take the filthy poxy wretch out of the city!" Twice more during the days that it took them to cross the littoral plain of the river and to reach the hills that marked the frontiers of the cultivated lands and the desert, they were stopped by military patrols. Each time the royal scroll and the plague victim were enough to send them on their way again with only the briefest delay. It was clear from the attitude of the patrols that in Thebes the substitution of corpses had not been discovered and that no alarm had been raised. All the same, Taita was relieved when they climbed the hills into the desert and followed the old trade route eastwards towards the Red Sea. Now Nefer was able to climb down from his bed in the wagon and for short periods limp along beside it. At first it was clear that despite his denials the leg was painful, but soon he was walking more easily and for longer periods. They rested for 3 days at the ancient ruined city of Galala. They refilled the water skins at the meagre and bitter well, and let the horses recover from the rigours of the hard, stony road. Bay and Taita tended their hocks and hooves. When they were fit to resume the journey, they turned aside from the known ways. Travelling in the cool of the night, they took the path known only to Taita that led to Jebel Nagara. Bay and Hilto swept their back trail and covered all signs of their passage. They arrived at the cave in the middle of a night lit by bright stars. There was not enough water in the tiny seep to supply so many men and horses, so once the wagon was unloaded, Hilto and Bay started back, leaving only Merin to serve Taita and Nefer. Hilto had resigned from his regiment on the pretext of ill health, so he was free, with Bay, to return with every full moon to bring supplies, medicine, and news from Thebes. The first month at Jebel Nagara passed swiftly. In the clean, dry desert air, Nefer's wounds closed without further reverses, and soon he was limping out into the desert to hunt with Merin. They startled the desert hares and bowled them over with their throwing sticks, or Taita sat on the crags of the hills above the spring and worked his charm of concealment to entice the herds of gazelle within arrow shot. At the end of that month, Hilto returned from Thebes with Bay. They brought the news that Taita's subterfuge was not yet discovered, and Pharaoh Najakaifan, along with all the populace, still believed that Nefer's corpse was pickling in the natron bath in the Hall of Sorrow. They also brought news of insurrections in the Lower Kingdom, and the terrible reprisals by Pharaoh Trok at Manashi. Unrest had also flared in the Upper Kingdom, where Naja, like Trok, had increased taxation and ordered an enlistment of men into the army. "The people are angry that there should be such an enlargement of the armed forces when there's peace throughout the land," Hilto reported. I think that the armed insurrection will soon spread to the Upper Kingdom, where Narja will deal with it as kindly as Trok has in the north. Those who cheered the ascension of these two pharaohs will soon have reason to regret it.
"What other news have you from the Lower Kingdom?"
Nefer asked eagerly. Hilto launched into a long recital of trade news and millet prices, of the visit of the Assyrian special envoy to the court of Pharaoh Trok. Nefer listened impatiently, and when Hilto had finished, he asked,
"What news is there of Princess Mintaka?"
Hilto looked puzzled. "None that I know of. I should think she's in Navaris, but I cannot be certain." On the incoming leg of his journey, Hilto had crossed the spoor of a large herd of oryx, and had asked Taita's permission to follow them up and hunt them. Dried venison would eke out their supplies, so Taita agreed readily. But he decreed that Nefer was not yet strong enough to join the hunting party. Strangely, this did not seem to make Nefer unhappy. Instead, he suggested that Taita go out with the hunting party to use his powers to find the game, and to conceal the hunters when they closed in. As soon as he was left alone in the cave, Nefer unpacked a small cedarwood chest of fresh papyrus rolls and writing material that Hilto had brought him, and began to compose a letter to Mintaka. He knew with all certainty that by now the reports of his death would have been received in Avaris. He remembered his own terrible suffering when he heard the false reports of Mintaka's death with her family at Balasfura, and he wanted to spare her the same kind of agony. He wanted also to explain that it was Narja and Trok who had annulled their betrothal, but as far as he, Nefer, was concerned, he still loved her beyond his own hope of eternal life, and would never rest until she was his wife. All this had to be couched in language that, should the scroll fall into the wrong hands, would be meaningless to any person other than Mintaka. He saluted her in his opening as the first star. She would remember how, when they discussed the derivation of her name, she'd told him, "I am called after the third star in the belt of the celestial hunter." He had replied, "No, not the third, the very first in all the firmament." He drew the symbols of the hieratic with great care. He'd always excelled at penmanship. He signed himself as the Fool from Dabba, sure that she'd recognize the reference to his solecism when they'd been alone in the desert. That evening, when the hunters had returned, and they were feasting on fresh oryx steaks, Nefer waited his opportunity to speak to Hilto in private. This came when Taita left the circle around the campfire to stalk out into the desert night for a while. Hilto had brought several large jars of beer among the load of supplies from Thebes, and Taita had enjoyed a bowl or two, but one of the few signs he showed of his age was the rate at which the brew passed through him. As soon as he was out of earshot, Nefer leant closer to Hilto and whispered, "I have a special duty for you to perform for me." "I shall be greatly honoured, Your Majesty." Nefer passed him the tiny roll of papyrus.
"Guard this with your very life," he ordered.
And when Hilto had hidden it in his shawl, Nefer gave him the orders for its delivery to the princess in Avaris. He ended with a further caution.
"Tell nobody of this, not even the Magus, on your sacred oath."
The following evening Hilto and Bay left Jebel Negara at the setting of the sun, when the air had started to cool. They made their loyal obeisance to Nefer, asked Taita for his blessing and a charm of protection, then struck out into the starlit wilderness. The horses toiled up the first slope of the dune hills and into the jumble of moon-silver rocks that crackled as they cooled in the night. Walking ahead of the horses, Bay suddenly recoiled, gave a startled exclamation in his savage tongue, and reached for the lion-bone charm on his necklace. He pointed it at the strange shape that had emerged from the shadow of the rocks. Hilto was even more agitated. "Stand aside, evil shade!" he shouted, cracked a whip, and made the sign against evil, then gabbled an incantation to turn aside all ghosts and hobgoblins. peace, Hildo, the apparition spoke at last. The moon was so bright that it threw a long shadow along the shale-hard earth and made the head of the creature glow like molten silver in the crucible. It is I, Taita the Magus.
It cannot be you, Hilto shouted. I left Taita at Jebel Nagara at sunset. I know you. You're some dreadful shade of the netherworld pretending to be the Magus.
Taita strode forward and seized Hilto's whip hand. Feel the warmth of my flesh, he said, and lifted Hilto's hand to his face. Feel my face and listen to my voice. However, it was only when Bay had touched Taita's breast with the lion bone, smelt his breath for the stench of the tomb, and declared him to be who he claimed he was, that the old warrior was reluctantly convinced.
But how did you reach this place ahead of us?
He demanded plaintively.
These are the ways of the adept, Bay told him mysteriously. It is best never to ask that question.
Hilto, you have something on your person that places all of us in mortal danger. Taita cut through the trivialities. It exudes the smell of death and confusion.
I cannot think what it might be, Hilto said uneasily.
It is something that was entrusted to you by the very Egypt, Taita insisted. And you know it well enough.
By the very Egypt?
Hilto scratched his beard and shook his head. Taita held out his hand, and Hilto sighed and capitulated without further resistance. He reached into the leather purse on his belt and brought out the roll of parchment. Taita took it from him. Say nothing of this, Taita warned him. Not to anybody, not to Pharaoh himself. You hear me, Hilto?
I hear you, Magus.
Taita held the papyrus in his right hand and stared hard at it. After a few seconds, a tiny glowing spot appeared on the scroll. A wisp of smoke curled up into the night air, and then abruptly it burst into flame. Taita let it burn out between his fingers without flinching at the heat, and crumbled the ashes to dust.
It's magic!
Hilto gasped.
A simple feat, Bay muttered. One that even an apprentice could perform.
Taita raised his right hand in benediction. May the gods keep you safe during your journey, he said, and watched the wagon roll away and merge with the gloom.